You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to the Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Wars, The Book of Boba Fett on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about the season premiere, the series premiere for The Book of Boba Fett, Chapter One, Stranger in a Strange Land. I think I want to call this all new live action Star Wars. It's certainly Star Wars focused on one of the fandom's favorite characters, I think. Like one of the most overappreciated characters, perhaps, given the amount of screen time he's had in the last 40 years, 50 years at this point. Aaron, what'd you think of this first episode?
Well, I got two opinions of it. Number one, my first opinion was I had read Alan Sepinwall's review, and he's seen more episodes than we have.
This doesn't sound like your opinion, but okay.
Well, but it was shaped by a person I respect a lot. Okay. And he said, this is, you know, this is kind of the grittier Bounty Hunter series that Mando promised before it pivoted to Grogu.
Really?
And it like goes, you know, some of the violence and the ruthlessness exceeds even that of what we saw in Mando. And I'm thinking like, well, I guess Mando is pretty rude. He fed that one dude alive to a pack of wild glowing red eyes and he's flamethrowed people and he's done people dirty. Like Mando's not a nice guy. He's a broadly speaking good guy. Mm-hmm. He's not a nice guy. And I'm like, okay, because that's what I thought Mando was going to be. I'm like, all right, Book Boba. Boba Fett gonna be rough and ready, not giving a shit. And I watched this episode and I'm like, this like down to the child sidekick that they give him by the end of the show, this feels so much like The Mandalorian in that, like, you've got a person who's supposed to be this gritty, ruthless, amoral person, and he's got a code. And I knew, like, you know, that's kind of like what I was expecting if I hadn't read Alan's review, you know, because Boba Fett is the prototypical kind of anti-hero.
He's
you know, the Punisher, only with the, you know, the skull sanded off of his breastplate. This is just kind of Mando. And then I watched the second time and I guess I appreciated it for what it was. And I liked it more that time. But I don't know, maybe this will get to that area, but like I was hoping a little bit for on the second live action series for them to branch out and do something a little bit different, a little bit more challenging, a little bit more older teenager kind of thing. And that's not what
shit,
this is.
I'd go for something adult at this point. Like, you got to think, how old are Star Wars fans? I mean, Star Wars fans were all ages when Star Wars came out originally in 1977. Star Wars fans now are really all ages. Like, a lot of them are very old at this point. Like, come on. I want something else, some other flavor from Star Wars at some point. And I know everybody loves Rogue One, and that's probably about as dark as Star Wars will ever get in Walt Disney has their hands on the switches. Because this is, as far as I can tell, a Mando clone. This is no pun intended, right? This is exactly the Mandalorian in tone, in aesthetic, in
cultural affiliation,
right? In music, in end credit sequence. Like, it doesn't know favors that they have just wholesale ripped the outro off of Mandalorian and put it on here with that, you know, concept art stuff. So yeah, I was looking.
The theme
for
is different,
else.
But not as good, right? They're like, I thought the, you know, I think the Mando is catchy. Like, I always find myself like humming it in the shower and breaking out into my little Mandalorian song. This, like, I couldn't hum it if you asked me to.
No, not yet. Certainly, it's not as memorable, I think, and I don't know, like, to call this anything but like a maybe a teen show. like maybe some YA stuff, seems disingenuous. I watched Mando fire a rocket at someone in this episode, and they disappeared. They were erased from the screen. It's there was no blood. There wasn't a single drop of blood on the wall where they were left. There was just
like a rated teen video game. You know, they just disappeared. It's gone.
I was taken aback. I thought like, oh, maybe there was some error in the effects, because that's just not how anything works. And I don't know. It became clear to me at that point that this is not an adult show, but you know, that's the market Disney's going after with this stuff, all this Star Wars stuff.
So here's another point into consideration, because I think that like these Star Wars shows, broadly speaking, are designed for a whole family to sit down and enjoy on a Saturday afternoon or a Friday night as they order pizza or whatever. Like, it's kind of like you get the Star Wars mom, the Star Wars dad, the Star Wars kids together, and you watch it. And that's been like, I've talked about it. Like, you know, when Mando came out, my son was like 11 going on 12. And he was like, you know, the idea of like an army of Mandalorians coming and jumping a bunch of thugs with their jetpacks and flamethrower and right. Like, he was like, fuck yes, this is everything I've ever wanted from Star Wars content. And he, you know, followed it through the next season and, you know, suitably excited about the return of Boba Fett and Luke's, all that stuff was cool. This year, I said, hey, it's, you know, the Book of Boba's coming out. Do you want to watch it with me? And he's like, ah, you know, if you want me to, that kind of thing.
Right.
Because he is addicted to The Expanse. Like, he's with you know, just beside himself to see the next episode for that. So, like, I think that, like, you know, and he's 15 going on 16. I think that's a problem that Disney's going to have, is like that, you know, I don't know. There's probably, I know there's lots of dudes that, but the thing is like, if you watch this as like a person, like a 35-year-old person that doesn't have kids yet, it's a 30-minute show. You just watch like a snack and then you move on. Like, I don't know like what big questions there are to answer. I don't know what we're going to learn about, like, as all these life lessons are going to teach us stuff that you probably already learned as a 12 or 13 year old watching Disney's Gargoyles and, you know, still like that's that kind of same brand and feeling where it's like, yeah, it's dark compared to DuckTales, but it's not dark compared to like literally anything else you'd watch as an adult. So it is this tweener show, and that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, it's just not what I hoped for after Mandalorian. Like, we already have the Mandalorian. We don't need another Mandalorian. We needed something else. And this is, I read somebody saying that they had hoped or were still hoping that this would become the Sopranos in space. I'm like, if you think that Disney is going to produce the Sopranos in space, you have lost your fucking mind.
Well, I was hoping, because I like when I saw the trailer, I'm like, the Godfetter?
Yeah,
like,
that's totally, but after seeing this episode, if you still think Disney might turn this into the Sopranos in space, you've lost your fucking mind.
Yeah, I saw another really funny tweet. I thought that's like, I can't believe because that's the thing. Like, look, motherfuckers, I'm a Star Wars fan. Don't come at me with this shit. I saw the originals in the motherfucking theater. I've read all the novels until well into the Vong. I played the old West End D6 game. Don't you kids come at me with this shit. So I just want to say that I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And because of that, like, there's some mind-blowing things out in the Star Wars galaxy. There's like primitive force users like shamans and witches. There's monks that spend their whole life with their brains in jars and bodies of mechanical spiders. There's like medic droids with human brains for some reason. Crazy shit. And the first two live action is like, essentially, imagine if you had the first two live action Star Wars was Stormtrooper and the second one was another Stormtrooper.
Right.
That's what we're getting. We're getting a Mandalorian and another Mandalorian.
Like, yeah, that's the most disappointing part about it, I think. Like, I could tolerate it not being like a super adult show. It's just, it's more of the same in every way. And not just in tone, but in like, everything about this feels like The Mandalorian.
Star Wars universe main character challenge can't be Jedi, soldier, bounty hunter, or smuggler. Go. Apparently, challenge level impossible, because I've seen the roadmap and we are not getting anything other than those archetypes for 2022, at least.
Yeah.
Steady doses of Jedi. And I'm pretty excited to see the Obi-Wan Kenobi, because that's a great character. Just like, but like, you know, I hope they have a little bit of that shifty kind of episode two Sherlock Holmes detective with force power, kind of like that kind of Obi-Wan, because I got, and like, we know what Obi-Wan is doing. He was stuck on Tatooine. Like, it's going to be fucking Mando part two, like part three, still on Tatooine. I don't know. I'm trying to maintain an open mind about this stuff, but like, again, this is a huge fucking galaxy and not just in terms of space, but time. Like, there's 10,000 years of the Star Wars universe that's roughly mapped out. And it's just kind of insane to me that they're just, you know, scooping full, you know, several scoops of the same flavor of ice cream again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess
now everyone switched off the podcast and they're pissed off.
Sure.
And Grandpa Aaron called him out, told him to get off his Star Wars lawn. I think. Get off my moisture farm, you kids. I think we're ready to talk about Stranger in a Strange Land.
I think so. Let's take a quick break first.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur: Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends, and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, we start off the episode with
Can we talk about the episode title a little bit?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Stranger in a Strange Land. Did you know that's a Bible quote?
I didn't.
It is. It is. I think it's interesting. It's from Exodus 2:22, and it's Moses naming his firstborn Gershom, which means a stranger there, and in Hebrew. And he explains, "I named you this because I've been a stranger in a strange land." You know, Moses, Hebrew slave, through a series of crazy aquatic adventures, ends up in the court of Pharaoh. Falls out of favor for murdering Egyptian, flees to another land. So he's just like, I think it's kind of interesting to, you know, for Favreau to name this episode after this, because this is like, I think anytime you're, it is a little Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston, you know, Boba, like walking over the burning plains of sand. Maybe there's even a little bit of Boba Fett's going to be some kind of savior figure to these sand people. Cause like, I sand people are pretty underserved characters in the Star Wars. They're like just essentially savages. You couldn't get away with having sand people if they were like a real, because like that's like, they would just be like these hideous stereotypes. And it'd be interesting for him to you know, flesh them out and make them fully sympathetic, really, you know, fully realized civilization. And I wonder if they're going to do something like that. But I was like, it could just be a sick ass title. Boba sounds cool.
But doesn't seem to speak Tusken Raider. But
does not.
Mando does? I think Mando does, right? Did he speak with them in Mandalorian?
I think so. Definitely can speak. And that's the other
pretty
thing.
Sure.
Is
so maybe this show won't be the show for it, but Mandalorian, they might do that.
Well, I think that Boba's going to learn.
Oh, you think so?
Because clearly there's going to be this parallel arc of Boba. I think there's going to be a parallel arc of Boba's adventures with the Sand People and becoming kind of like master of those two worlds, with the adventure of him like becoming this new crime boss in Mos Espa and Tatooine, and kind of learning, and that's that skill set he has, being a crime boss. I think there's going to be a parallel structure of him becoming master of both of these worlds. It seems to me anyway.
Yeah, how much time passed during Mandalorian?
That's a great question. I have no, a year or so total.
Yeah, I didn't really keep track of it at all.
Depends how much time he spent hiding out in some of the various worlds where, because he spent good amount of time on some of that, that swamp world kind of hiding out. But yeah.
All right. I don't know. It seems like there must have been a power vacuum for quite a while in the deserts of Tatooine. Since between the time that Jabba dies and the time that Boba
kept
could
it going
learn
a little bit
to speak Tusken Raider and unite the people and come back and claim the throne and build the throne too. They don't mention it, but there's just a fucking throne there. I don't know what Jabba would have had a use for a throne.
So that was Jabba's dais. It is built on that, but I imagine Bib Fortuna didn't just lounge on the dais, right? He probably had a throne installed.
Throne. The throne does look cool. I love the rancors on the front, on the armrests. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. We pan through Jabba's palace to Boba in a back to tank while flashing back to his father, quote in quotes there, his father's death. And then we flash back to him burning his way out of the Sarlacc pit and passing out in the sand. And then sucking some vital fluids from a stormtrooper in the process.
Yeah. Hijacking his
air supply.
Oxygen supply? Air supply? Because he's does Boba not have an oxygen supply? I thought part of Boba's thing was it's among other things, a spacesuit.
Yeah, I thought it might be. But
maybe he didn't bother to fill up the oxygen tank because he didn't plan on going into space. You know, he's just going to chill at the Jabba's party. He's going to mac on a couple Twi'lek pilot girls. He was just going to, have a good old time. Spend some of his Han Solo money. And he ends up getting... I saw some people have problems. I don't remember stormtroopers being fed to the Sarlacc. I'm like...
You're telling me a couple of stormtroopers didn't go in during that fight?
I don't think stormtroopers...
They weren't
To me, a stormtrooper's a cop, and Jabba's a crime lord, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to find a couple dead stormtroopers in the Sarlacc pit, because sometimes you gotta kill a couple of these guys.
There's your Sopranos in space.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
Put a couple of bodies in the Hudson Sarlacc.
I know you were... Or maybe you weren't. Were you a Parks and Rec fan?
I watched it. Some of it. I have not seen most of it, I would say.
I think it's interesting because Patton Oswalt had this, longstanding. He had this character, and he was doing a filibuster of some kind of Pawnee politics. And what he did is he told this whole long, 8 minute long fan fiction story. They only use the first minute or two in the show, but it went a little something like this, Jim.
pan down from the twin suns of Tatooine. We are now close on the mouth of the Sarlacc pit. After a beat,
is this playing?
The gloved Mandalorian armor gauntlet of Boba Fett grabs onto the sand outside the Sarlacc pit, and the feared bounty hunter pulls himself from the maw of the sand beast.
Okay, this is exactly...
And we realize that he survived his fall during the battle at Jabba's palace ship.
I thought it was funny that, like, you know, they did this thing. You can't see this as a podcast, but they superimposed his description of the scene over the actual scene itself. And it is a nice little kind of like homage. I mean, it's tough because, like, again, this is what we didn't know the details, but this is literally what, you know, like, we don't know if he jet packed out or what, but this is kind of literally, I have a lot of questions. Like, how the hell did he burrow through all that sand?
Yeah.
Like, that sand's heavy, man. I don't know, like, maybe jet packed or something. Or
and it's rough and coarse and gets everywhere.
Gets everywhere, especially when you got acid sand. This is the skin.
Yeah.
Gets partially digested Sarlacc skin. I don't think it'd be comfortable. I don't. But he burns and slices his way outside.
Yeah, he sure does. I don't know. I mean, yeah, what else do we expect, right? He's in the Sarlacc pit. He's got to get out of the Sarlacc pit. I guess the other possibility is he just jetpacks straight up and out of it.
Yeah, I was hoping, I thought the Sarlacc, okay, what do you think of the Sarlacc? I like the sound design, like the throbbing kind of heartbeat, slow heartbeat, something that would, you know, sounds like something would digest you for 1,000 years. I thought the design of it itself, like the big latex sheets and folds were...
Yeah, that's a little cheap, but it looked... I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I envisioned the inside of a Sarlacc pit looking like, but I didn't feel like these things would really keep you there. Like, they're slippery, I guess, so there's no way you could really climb up out of it if you didn't. I mean,
you could
have
see daylight from where he was at. That was a crazy thing.
Yeah, like, he's so, like, not I think too he far could've... from the surface.
Of course, his jetpack was malfunctioning because Han smashed, so maybe he couldn't. But it would have been interesting to see him do something besides just like hack slash and burn his way through the surface. I don't know.
Yeah, and they didn't even show that because it. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense that he burns out the side and then swims through the sand to get out. But okay,
did the Sarlacc look dead to you when he? Because like I noticed, there's like a bunch of limp tentacles hanging out of his mouth. Do you think Boba Fett has canonically killed the Sarlacc? Because it certainly wasn't dead from just Boba's skiff exploding over. I heard its heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really notice that. I know that in the Tales of the Bounty Hunter, he leaves it like not quite dead. It's still alive in the story where he gets out in the expanded universe from before Disney took over. What do they call that now?
Oh, the Legends.
Yeah, Star Wars Legends. He leaves it alive there. So I assume it's still kind of alive, like he is, just barely.
Maybe having some asshole tear itself out of your stomach can't be good for you.
Yeah. But yeah, it probably got a lot of sand in its mouth.
Looked like overcooked linguine in a well-picked over bowl from Olive Garden to me.
Yeah.
Did not look like a vital ongoing concern.
Yeah, I'm with you. So then the Tusken Raiders find Boba and take him prisoner. And they squeeze a bunch of bug juice in his mouth, which was pretty gross.
Grub squeezins.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is that their version of smelling salts? Because it wakes him up.
I mean, if someone squeezed a grub into my mouth, it'd get me up and going too, sure.
Also, is it better or worse than Luke's blue milk fiasco?
Well, Boba seems to enjoy it a lot less than Master Skywalker. Master Skywalker seems to revel in the fresh squeezed blue milk. But what'd you think of the Jawas just like stealing Boba Fett's armor? I mean,
it needed a way to get out there, right? Like,
well,
it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of painted themselves into a corner with the story that they told with Tim Oliphant last year, but I don't understand what it took Boba Fett so long to get his armor back. Like, he's the most famed tracker and feared tracker and bounty hunter in the galaxy. That seems to me like his wandering was a lot more voluntary than I would have imagined. Because I think if he wanted to track down the Jawas to rob the shit, he could do it no problem.
Yeah, I wonder if the timeline we'll see just lines up where he had just gotten away from the Tusken Raiders, essentially, and was coming back for his armor at that point. Yeah. I don't know.
I do kind of, every time I see like a beloved figure in the hands of a billion-dollar company, I always think, like, do they understand what they're doing moment to moment? Like, do they understand like what it looks like to have like one of the biggest badasses of all time to have their his chain snatched by Jawas,
mm-hmm.
and to like need another Mandalorian's help to get it out of the pawn shop? Like, I hope that they have thought all this through and have really good answers for that, because otherwise it's, you know, Boba Fett might be the next Worf, where it's like, oh, well, he's, I don't know, but who's trying to put over the Jawas as badasses, you know?
Like, oh, yeah, just, nobody.
Yeah, and I get it, you're half digested by Sarlacc, but the next day you're going to get up, you're going to get a grub squeezed into you, and you're going to do a death march across the Dune Sea, so what the hell?
Yeah, he gets worse before he gets better, for sure. Yeah, let's talk about it. Mando's taken back to the Tusken Raider camp. He's beaten by a gang of Tusken punks and attacked mm-hmm. by a Massif, and the punks prove too much for him. They knock him out. But he fights off the Massif and uses the teeth to cut his bindings. He tries to run, but he's chased down and recaptured after a fight, which I'm shocked that he can even stand up, let alone fight.
What's the deal with the Rodian, too, by the way?
I don't know, just another prisoner. Well, what do you mean, what's the deal?
I'm kind of with Boba. Like, dude, I asked you if you want to be free, and you, like, alert our hosts that we're good.
Yeah, that, what's the deal? I don't know, man. This guy's got some kind of masochistic death wish.
He's
here.
Got, like one day
wish.
In the sand, he's full-on Stockholm syndrome, uh-huh. sandperson syndrome. He doesn't know what to do. And we're never going to find out either, because he gets mauled by Machamp at the end. So
I'm gonna say he's afraid of the punishment. Like, if, you know, he's not confident in his own ability to escape, and he's afraid of the punishment if he tries. That's my headcanon.
And he does have, you know, kind of bloated, partially digested Boba Fett. He doesn't look impressive. He just watched this guy get beat down by children.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe the confidence is not necessarily off the scales here.
No, if Boba has his armor in that scene, I think he's like, hell yeah, get us out of here, man.
I did like the different, like the distinctive garb these sand people were wearing. I wonder if they're going to establish some. These like look altogether more mystical, or, you know, yeah. Some people describe them as goth, but I thought they looked more like warlock.
Uh-huh,
like these,
sure.
These sand people commune with a dark god kind of flavor.
Yeah, they might do more with that. Who knows? They don't do much with it in this episode. They do have a clear, you know, roles within their society, right? There's like a chieftain of some kind. There's like the warrior who actually goes out there and fights him in this scene.
That kind
of stuff. All right. Finnick pulls Mando out of the back to tank. We're back to current time. Pulls Mando out of the back to tank. He suits up to receive tribute from the locals. And Boba perhaps makes an enemy of the mayor of Mos Espa. We'll see how that shakes out. And then he acquires two new bodyguards in the form of the Gamorreans who used to serve Jabba.
I want to say, like, because we had a little fun with Tamir Morrison last year, you know,
sure.
Boba Fett,
uh-huh.
Chunky Fett. He, you know, the guy, he got a call. He's probably chilling in New Zealand. You know, living his best Tamora Morrison life, and they're like, hey, we need you to squeeze back into the to your fucking Django arm. And he's like, what now?
Yeah.
And he just came over there and they squeezed him into, they got the breastplate stretcher out, the Beskar stretcher. They squeeze him in. I gotta say, he's more Jake the Muss than Boba Fett. He's looking pretty fighting in fighting form for 61-year-old man.
Is that how old he is? Yeah. Hell yeah.
He's 61. But here's the crazy thing. Finnick, Ming-Na Wen, how old do you think this woman is?
36.
She is 58 fucking years old. She was 36 voicing Mulan, dude. Like, I could. There's only a 3-year age gap between these people. What the genetics is going on? That's insane. Insane.
She's been in the Bacta tank, apparently.
She's been sleep. Yeah, like in between movie roles, she just crawls into the Bacta tank. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, wow. We had a passionate debate before the podcast. Mm-hmm. You took exception with this Boba getting his armor scene. You said
armoring up. Sure. The commando-esque. You've seen this scene in 50 other movies. Yeah.
Sure. Rambos, commandos, Batmans. They're all, if you got a guy Batman who's got a Robin, bunch of cool. Yeah. Yeah. You got a guy's got a cool cod piece. Here's a close up of it slipping on his crotch. Like, yeah. And so what was your line? You didn't think the what?
No, I didn't think that this show had earned this moment at all. This is a moment where Boba is should be a moment where Boba is triumphant. Boba has returned to his true form, his old self. Boom, you get the Boba Fett suit up scene and you're like, hell yes, Boba's going to go kick some ass. As is, this scene comes directly off of him failing to escape the Tusken Raiders. This comes directly off of him being yanked out of the sexual healing tank that he's in by Finnick. This scene just was totally out of place in this moment. Completely out of place.
All right, I'm going to disagree with you first, and I'm going to agree with you. First of all, like, okay. I can see having that opinion if you just fell off the pop culture turnip truck and you have no idea what Star Wars or Boba Fett is. But the idea that Boba Fett has to justify a scene of him putting his sick ass armor on
that doesn't mean
in glorious 4K. Like, come on.
No,
Boba Fett is his armor suit.
You can't use the meta to justify the actual story that they're telling here, because the story that they're telling is one of a weak, broken man who has not returned to his current form. And yet they're playing triumphant music as if he has, simply because he puts the armor on. It's bad storytelling. Mm.
So I will agree with you there, because like I do, you know, of course I haven't seen this whole series. My mind could change, but like more and more shows are doing this kind of like memento, telling two parallel stories, different times. I'm in the middle of watching Station 11. They're doing it for better or worse. Yeah, so there's a bunch of shows that do this, and I'm like, I kind of am with you. Like, why can't we just tell the story of Boba Fett, like, getting his mojo back with the Sand People, and it can end triumphantly with him retaking Jabba's throne and like getting the armor up or something? Like, it's by telling the story out of order, you're right. You're simultaneously telling Boba's story when he's at his weakest, he's at his lowest point, he's at his nadir, and you're simultaneously at his triumphant ascension to Boba's throne, which we still don't know exactly how he did or what he did. And he just kind of like, I guess Boba's fortress was abandoned, but he still has an empire to get. Like, I'm sure they'll tell the rest of that story, but the way they're doing it with that bifurcated timeline, it is. I don't think they need to justify a Boba Fett armor sequence, but I understand what you're saying from a storytelling perspective. It does feel like the beats are out of sync, and they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Boba looks good on Jabba's throne. I thought the Jabba's throne sequence, like, you know, seeing our old friends, Aqualish. You know, joke about needing a protocol droid because you can't understand these people that don't speak basic or Farsi or whatever. Huttese? That's what it is. The Trandoshan, who's kind of like menacing, like, may you never leave Mos Espa. Like, and then you got the Mayor Carsetti from The Wire sending his Twi'lek lackey to disrespect Boba Fett. That's not going to go well.
I liked the writing in that scene. I think that exchange is pretty good. I do want to give them credit where credit's due here, because the way that flips and turns on its head and like, oh, just one matter, the tribute, and he's confused and like, I got it. I understood what he was saying, but Boba's fresh out of the back to tank. He's a little disoriented. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I wonder what the story, because, like, you know, to me, Boba is like a legend, especially in this kind of space, like in a criminal kind of underworld. Like, this would be like disrespecting Michael Corleone in Godfather 2. Like, but maybe from the mayor's perspective, like, how long has Boba been in the tank? How long has he been in the Sarlacc pit? We don't really know. How long has he been in the care of the Sand People? How long has he been back to? I wonder if there's a question of, like, is this even Boba Fett? because we had another guy walking around in Boba Fett's armor, pretending to be Boba. I wonder if there's some kind of if this is the real Boba Fett, like, oh, sure, Boba Fett has come back out of the Sarlacc pit to sit on Jabba's throne, because otherwise this mayor seems incredibly foolhardy.
Yeah, I was wondering if this is an arrangement that he had with Jabba. Was Jabba paying tribute to the mayor of Mos Espa, or and surely is it just a continuation of their arrangement, or is this a new arrangement that, you know, is this a test of power here?
Well, so they call, I don't know if you noticed this, but they called Boba the daimyo, I think is how you pronounce that. And this is essentially the equivalent, this is the Japanese equivalent of a feudal lord.
Yeah.
Like you had the shogun, which was the essentially the real power behind the Japanese society at the time. Nominally, it was the emperor, but the shogun ran shit. And then the daimyos were the guys, his underbosses, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this idea that, like, if Jabba's that implies that there was another level above Jabba of criminal crime bossery. And I wonder if this is like, because I'm just taking this guy as a lightweight idiot that's going to get thumped. Maybe this guy's got a little bit more bottom, like you said. If fuck Jabba paid tribute to this guy, that would be a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah, and I don't know that that's the case. I'm just wondering aloud.
It'd be interesting.
Uh-huh. Did you know that Matt Berry voices the droid in this scene?
The torture droid?
Yes, the one that... Yeah, suggest the torture, sure.
No, I heard that he did a voice, and I wanted to look it up, but I did not know it was him. Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's going to be an ongoing, because Matt Berry's got a great voice, and he's very funny.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. And being him being the officious, like, torture droid that doesn't get to torture anymore sounds funny. That sounds really funny.
I think so. And if you don't know, a lot of Matt Berry,
who is Matt Berry? If because like I don't think he's a household name.
Oh, I mean, What We Do in the Shadows. He plays Laszlo. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He's in the IT Crowd. He plays the boss in the second season.
Probably where a lot of people know him from.
Yeah, he's had a lot of roles lately, and a lot of British television. So,
Toast of London. Very funny. Mm-hmm. What was that? The Dark Place. I forget the spoof of the
Marenghi. Is that something?
Yeah, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place or something like that. Like a weird 80s pseudo hospital supernatural urban thriller kind of thing.
Yeah.
But lately he's very
What
funny.
We Do in the Shadows is what people know him for.
100%.
All right. Anything else on that scene, or shall we keep moving?
Did we talk about the Gamorreans coming over to his side?
Not really. I mentioned it happens, but what about
it? Yeah. I don't know. Like, again, this feels a little bit Star Wars-y to me. Like, we're going to have the Gamorrean guards, you know, because that's what Jabba... But I guess that makes a lot of sense. And they're also doing Jabba... Like, you know, they're trying to do a clear contrast between Boba and Jabba. Jabba ruled by fear, and Jabba's trying... Boba Jabba. And Boba's trying to rule through respect.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. Like, again, like this feels such like a just seamless stepping into the Jabba role. I kind of wish that maybe Boba had an opportunity to build out his own crew of underlings and people that we would get to know. Cause like, it's like, you know, this thing is like Gamorreans. Like, I don't know. Maybe we'll get a rich Gamorrean culture. But they've always been they're just literally pigs.
Yeah.
They're literally pigmen, you know?
No, we'll see what they do. I don't know. Are they going to fill out the backstory for the Gamorreans?
They're loyal. They're brave. They're good in combat. But, like, you know, like, I don't think there's going to be classic Gamorrean guard dialogue, you know?
Probably not. No. Yeah. There probably won't be any dialogue from them, at least for
Chewbacca
a while.
Manages to get in. A quipper three, even though he doesn't speak basic. So maybe they'll do something with the grunting. But yeah.
We'll see. All right, before we continue, let's take a quick break. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in a club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Next up, Boba, Fennec, and his guards visit a casino in Mos Espa where he is paid tribute. Afterward, they're ambushed by some shield warriors. I don't know who these people are, and that's kind of the point. But they manage to win the fight and take one prisoner. And then Boba is dragged back to his Bactapod for some liquid healing. What'd you think of these scenes here?
I thought there's some interesting dynamic of like Boba trying to do things his way in a society that's very much used to something else. And it reminded me a lot of like Queen Daenerys's travails in Essos, where she's horrified and she wants to put the end to this. She wants to put the end to that. And the people themselves have mixed feelings about some of their reforms. And she has to kind of like balance, you know, what she wants to do with what that she has available to work with. And I think that'd be an interesting that like there is a, you know, there's some interesting shades of gray you can introduce into to that, you know, like the Boba, maybe Boba, you're better off like being carried on a litter because that's what people are comfortable with. And that's what people recognize as power. And by bucking that, you're bucking the whole system. I thought the casino was kind of cool. Like it's a little too nice for what I thought
Yeah, on Tatooine, probably.
Would have, but this isn't Mos Eisley, which is the wretched hive of scum and villainy. This is, I guess one of the nicer burbs. It's cool to see Max Rebo, or I guess it could just be some other. I didn't know what Max Rebo's species was until I looked it up for this podcast, and Ortolan, the little blue, cute pachyderm kind of keyboard players.
Mm-hmm.
And the helmet polishing, I thought that was kind of weird, but like it's also. I think it showed Boba might be a little bit more familiar with the customs than she was, because he's like, oh no, let him polish our helmets. And like, I think he knew what the score was going to be there. So
and when it comes back with all those credits in there, which are Republic credits.
I paused to see if there was any Rebel old Imperial
on them.
They're taking credits. They're taking credits out here now. There's been a huge improvement since episode one. People take Republic credits now.
Apparently, yeah. I love the line when those helmets come back and she says, looks like yours is shinier than mine. It's exactly. A really good line.
Also, polishing helmets, like, is this Favreau being a little adult? Because that's that's
right.
That's slang for cock knocking, man. It's like polishing mm-hmm. your helmet, you know.
Yeah, don't tell me Jabba never had his helmet polished.
Yeah, my 6.5-inch Kenner figure polishing that up into mint condition. I don't know. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny too. And then the energy shield guys. So what's your suspicion about these guys?
I didn't have any. I don't know. They could be from the mayor. They are in Mos Espa. It was the mayor of Mos Espa who said, you'll get a delegation or whatever. So
expected this soon. Yeah. I think it's the mayor flexing.
Yeah, probably.
And I gotta say, did Boba's brain get digested partially? Because this guy fires a rocket,
dude,
straight into a surrounded by a shield wall and almost kills himself and his partner.
But totally doesn't also, like, this is the weird.
Yeah, it's G.I. Joe.
This is weird shit. Yeah. He fires a rocket 2 feet from his face. It explodes and he's fine. Right. Like, totally fine. He gets knocked down. He gets right back up. No problem. Then he fires that same rocket at a dude later and it erases him from existence.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't have one of these wrist rockets totally obliterating, de-atomizing a human being, mm-hmm. and then also have it blow up in his face and him be fine. But
Boba Fett is a fan of vaporization or disintegration, I should say.
He is a fan.
But I mean, Boba Fett and we've seen like so much of more of their weaponry now. Like he's got like fucking knee-mounted rockets and
a jetpack, vibroblades out of the center of that problem. Yeah.
And a flamethrower that he could have like started sweat. Like there's like, I don't know why he went wrist rocket, man.
right.
It's like one of those things where it's like, did they understand again? He's still half back the tank and all that. But like, it's a little bit surprisingly buffoonish, turn for Mando or for the Mandalorian, for Boba Fett, who is also a Mandalorian. Like he got his ass kicked throughout this episode. Everyone, he got saved by the Gamorrean guards.
Mm-hmm.
Finnick handles two of these people complete, like with some space parkour and some space kung fu.
Yeah, that was cool.
And yeah, I don't know, like maybe Boba's weaker than we think, which maybe you should wear your helmet more often, dude.
It's tough to wear a helmet.
Rocket
full.
From 3 feet away not wearing a helmet. Not even
tribute,
eye protection,
man. Full of that tribute.
And that's how he got robbed by Jawas twice in the same episode, man. Jawas.
He did. I thought the space parkour was pretty cool. I enjoyed that stuff. Especially
I love
swinging
watching parkour
around a wall from a pipe. That was neat.
To me, parkour, if you're James Bond, do some parkour. You're Matt Damon, do some parkour. If you're a space bounty hunter, definitely do some parkour. Did not mind that at all.
Good stuff. And then we get another flashback. We're back with Boba and the other prisoner who are taken out to the desert by a single Tusken Raider child to dig for water. And they find some, but also they find more than that when a huge creature comes out of the sand and attacks them. Boba kills it and they bring back the head, earning Boba some water and perhaps his freedom from the leader of the tribe there.
I thought for a minute that was going to be a Rancor.
And I'm, I thought and it was I like started, a crate dragon, but yeah.
Yeah, we had the crate dragons and Mando last year. But I was like, you know, and again, because I'm a real fucking Star Wars fan, I know that Rancors are native to the, all right? Native to the planet of Dathomir, where all those Force Witches I was talking, they ride Rancors like Battle Beast.
Oh, like, yeah.
I thought, right. And I'm like, well, that's legend, so maybe they're just kind of like rewriting that. But no, it turns out it's like, this isn't a species unknown to Star Wars science, and it's not named this episode. It's like a scaly lizard Pokemon Machamp. Four arms, two legs, although maybe two arms
like
and
a
four
Goro
legs.
Kind of thing. Yeah, like it's a Minotaur Goro.
Yeah, and it's got that thing where it can be like a centaur form, or it can be like upright. Centaur, I thought it was a kind of a cool. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a pretty cool looking alien.
Yeah,
not,
for sure.
Not a bad addition to the canon.
I agree.
Do you think? What do you think? They have this. I had a couple scenes of like this youngling for some reason. I have no idea why the old people let him take these prisoners out into the desert to farm moisture. They stopped off at this like Aunt Beru, Uncle Owen's kind of moisture farm homestead. They saw them being wrecked by these gangsters who are painting these back to back, like double J kind of things.
Yeah.
And then they dig J-O. Up these water pods. I don't understand how water works on Tatooine.
I don't think anybody does.
I thought the moisture farms were like evaporators. In fact,
I thought they were collected from the air.
Does Uncle Owen know he could go rake his yard and get water?
Right?
Like, I don't know how much evaporator water can get from the dry air of the double sunned desert, but like, apparently there's this like liter, like there's like fucking,
there's bottled water right directly below their feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, get a bulldozer in there, man. Get some earth movers and just start a business. Start a real business.
This is why the humans, they should have asked the natives that lived on the planet before they started moisture farming. This is the equivalent of the Native Americans teaching the colonists how to grow corn with dead fish. You know, you plant one kernel of corn, one dead fish. You don't get water. You just dig. You dig for a couple minutes. Yeah. You'll find these fossilized water bottles. Yeah, the Nestle race has dumped tons of these bottles over the desert. And you just dig them up.
I guess you needed some way for the Tusken Raiders to be able to survive out there, right? Like, you can't have moisture evaporation being the only source of water here because they don't have that tech. So
I think they just dig a well, man. Like the Bedouin thing, you know, like you can, there's gotta be
water
somewhere.
Yeah.
It's weird. And I thought, like, was the implication that the youngling was just going to knock off this moisture farm for water and he couldn't do that, so he's going to make the prisoners dig? I was very unclear about, like, was this a coming of age ritual? Like, what is the deal? Was he out here to attack this six arm thing and bring its head back?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that was a surprise. But yeah, I was unclear on exactly the chain of events here. But I don't know. In the end, yeah. I'm curious if the gangs, like these roving gangs, are going to be more of a thing. Because like painting those symbols seems like they're setting something up. You know, keep an eye on these symbols here. But they're totally unconnected. I wonder if this is some kind of like challenge to, you know, a rival gang sort of thing that Boba's going to have to deal with later.
I think it might be the mayor again. Like, I think the mayor, like, after Bib Fortuna died, thought, here's a giant power vacuum, and I'm going to step right into it, not knowing that Boba Fett had designs on it. And then he thinks that he's already encircled enough of Jabba's empire that he can fight this guy off. But I don't know.
All right. I mean, if the mayor wants to employ
the mayor's
the
name
underworld.
Is Mock Shiaz.
Okay.
And I was like, but like that doesn't seem like this doesn't seem like the maybe is this because this look like an M from the right? Nah, I don't know. Nah. I don't know what they're going for, but I'm guessing this is all connected to the mayor.
Okay.
Until I see otherwise, he's the one that's trying to, like, you know, to out Boba Fett, I guess.
Gotcha.
And I think that we'll know next episode because Finnick did catch one of those guys alive. And I guess there'll be a question about, like, does Boba Fett not believe in torture when he's trying to interrogate some punk to try to kill him?
Sure.
Because I really want to see this Mandalorian warrior just get what he wants by asking politely.
Right. With a cup of hot chocolate. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe that's the whole point of this first scene, is going to be testing this kinder, gentler, no torture rule. And they're just setting it up in this first episode.
Do you think there's going to be a little bit of Dune where, like, the mayor has, like, gotten a lot of Jabba's old empire and his old toughs and his old thugs, and the Boba Fett's going to use desert power? He's essentially going to use the natives. He's going to militarize and organize the tribes of sand people to be his muscle.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of smart.
I want to see a Krayt dragon tooth dagger at some point.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The Star Wars and Disney, of course, the Star Wars must flow. This is not stopping. There is no fucking way. There's no brakes on
this.
We've
got spice. Yeah, give me a fucking Kessel show. I want to see, like, the Kessel spice mines, right? Like, I want to see
who's the fucking Dark Lord of Disney right now? It's not Eisner. Who's the C? I need someone to make one of those memes of, like, that guy telling shit, who's the tough guy from Guardians of the Galaxy that was
Drax?
The tough guy on Drax, who plays that guy?
He was in Dune. Dave Bautista. Yeah,
Dave Bautista. I need the current Dark Lord of Disney telling Dave Bautista in Dune to squeeze the Star Wars nerds for all they've got, because that's what they're doing. We're being squeezed. We're being squozed.
It really does feel like it in a show that is essentially a clone of The Mandalorian. It does feel a little
like
squeezy.
If you wanted to make this show, why The Mandalorian?
Right. Yeah. Well, we've already got a beloved Mandalorian character. Let's do that one. But
right. Okay. Right. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see where they go. If they can take it in interesting. Because again, I was kind of excited for the Godfetter. I like to see, like, the smart side of Boba Fett, like shifting alliances and trying to, having dinners where he's saying that lightning's going to strike somebody if, the baby Grogu doesn't make it back from his Italian vacation. You know, like, I wanted to see some stuff like some Brando shit. I didn't expect Brando to lose 100 pounds and come back and just get his ass kicked in all the fights. We'll see where it goes. That's what we thought. What did you think? We are opening up the feedback. It's Tribe. We're going to keep the Tribe at 2, because the Tribe at 2 was never, it was never the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda. It was always me and Jim. You guys got that, right? We were the Tribe at 2. And we will still be the Tribe at 2 as we trek through the Star Wars cinematic universe of Disney Plus. It's not a promise to do every Disney Plus Star Wars live action show. But we're going to, each project, we're going to look at it and gauge your interest and gauge the community's temperature as far as their appetite for Star Wars, and then cover it or not based on those metrics. But we'll be back next week to talk about the next episode of Boba. Also, what's our release schedule going to be going forward? Because I know, the Christmas break kind of caught us flat-footed, and we're here a couple days late to the party. Are we going to try to get these out, like, on a Friday release schedule like we did with Mando, or are we going to keep up the Monday release?
I think Friday makes a lot of sense, since this is, releasing, since episodes air on Wednesday.
Okay. That's what I was thinking too, but I wasn't sure that we had finalized that. So
we hadn't, but I think we just did.
Friday releases here on out. Tribe@baldmove.com is where you send the feedback. And it's where I'm a take on all you young punk Star Wars comers. Bring it. Tribe@baldmove.com. We'll see you next week for the Book of Boba Fett.